Coming up on podcast 1385, a significant Stellantis EV roadmap update is unveiled by the company. Stick around, I've got all the details. Also on the show today, electric two-wheeled machines from Livewire, Cupra launching two more electrified models, and Volkswagen shifting their ID3 production in the UK to streamline their offering a bit. But why? Well, stick around, I'll tell you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you're listening in the world, it's EV News Daily for Thursday, 24th of February. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. Welcome to a new Patreon producer. That'll be you, Chris Heron. Hi, Chris. Thank you for signing up to be support the podcast and be a producer. I really, really appreciate your support. Another name added to the Patreon list. It means so much to everybody that helps this podcast get on the air, hopefully be a trusted source of information in the EV world. Well, the Stellantis product roadmap has been released officially, not a leak. So this is all good official data. We like this stuff on this podcast. So it's been a good long, it's been a few minutes talking about this. Stellantis, of course, made up of Group PSA and Fiat Chrysler, I still call it the newly merged group for many people. I guess Stellantis is a name that means nothing, so I always try and explain what that company is now. The newly enlarged company has plenty of brands under their umbrella to electrify, and while announcing their financial results for last calendar year, one of the documents, one of the slides made available on their website is their roadmap for 2022 and 2023 for EVs. They will launch a total of 17 vehicles, low-emission vehicles, so plug-in hybrids and EVs, this year and next year. In addition, so those 17 EVs, in addition to the 34 available today across all of their brand segments and markets. And again, many of these not available to the US market. So something that when I get an email from somebody saying, hey, what do you recommend? I'm in the market. What could I buy? Always have to ask, well, where are you emailing me from? Because we've got a ton of vehicles over here in Europe that aren't, a bit like China, really, aren't available to my US listeners. And really, really heartbreaking. But I know a lot of those wouldn't be big sellers or they're smaller city cars. I get the fact that, you know, trucks and all that in the US market will be the priority. But Stellantis, with the Alfa Romeo brand, we'll see a plug-in hybrid. The Tonale, already unveiled, we knew that, already unveiled, goes on sale this summer, and it will come to the US market. So, end of the year, on sale in the US by the end of 2022, this summer for Europe. And yes, it's a plug-in hybrid, but still interesting to talk about Alfa Romeo electrifying. At Citroën, two pure battery electric vehicles confirmed this year and next year. The names, we don't know. We think one of them could be the next-gen C3, or EC3, I guess we would call it. There's also a plug-in hybrid version of the C5X listed on this spreadsheet, and previous reports mentioning the Dodge brand. This is the Dodge plug-in hybrid, underpinning shared with the Alfa Romeo Tonale. That could well just be a rebadged Tonale. They could call it the Hornet, says this report. Now, Fiat only has one in this deck, the all-electric, still-to-be-announced, Panda. So the Panda was the first proper car I think I ever had. Not the first car that I bought with my own money, because that was a Cinquecento. That was when I was 18 or 19. And that was spent my, like, my proper first car, that I got a job, earned money, bought a car. But this was, I think I shared it with my mum, or then maybe it kind of became, and then it was a Fiat Uno after. I think the Panda was the first one I actually, maybe I learned to drive in a Fiat Panda. Either way, that car has a special place in my motoring history, and it is going all electric. Now, what about the Jeep brand? The roadmap includes the already unveiled Grand Cherokee 4xe. That's the plug-in hybrid. Launches this year, and a full electric Jeep in 2023. What's it going to be called? We don't know. We just don't know at this stage. Alfa Romeo CEO recently saying that the Brunello EV will launch in 2024, which means its Jeep equivalent will launch the year before, judging by the product roadmap. Maserati, I mentioned recently on the show. Maserati. I'd heard about the Grecale. All of their cars are named after wind. You know, like Mediterranean winds. Now, they were talking about the electrification of the Grecale. It's an SUV. and I could never pinpoint whether that was going to be a plug-in hybrid or a full electric. Well, thanks to this new presentation, because they helpfully coloured all of their little symbols different colours for the plug-ins and the full electrics, it's going to be a full electric. And that's brilliant. A full electric Maserati, as I'd suspected, I think maybe a week ago on this podcast, I was talking about that. And again, very exclusive, very expensive, not for everyone, but the Maserati brand, which again is, I think, appealing to so many people because of drama and noise and exhausts and things like that going electric. It's a real turning point, a real shift in motoring culture. The Grecale, the SUV in 2023. On the Vauxhall front, or I should say the Opel front, because it really is Opel everywhere apart from here where it's Vauxhall. The new Astra, that's a big, big seller. It's a hatchback, and the estate version of that, getting plug-in hybrids and pure electric versions, and the same for the Peugeot 3E308. And finally, Ram. Ram launching an all-electric ProMaster. That's a next year launch, a 2023 launch, but that'll go up against, of course, the Ford E-Transit and GM's Bright Drop vans, amongst other commercial competitors. If you want to see the roadmap yourself, I'll pop a link from the Inside EVs in the show notes so you can read more. Now, let's talk battery cells and what goes inside an electric car. SK Innovation, SKI, really recently spun off their battery division. SK On is the company. And the CEO of SK On is Ji Dong Sob, saying yesterday that he will make the company the world's number one electric vehicle battery player. Such is the ambition in the world of electric vehicles. That title at the minute held by CATL by a really long way. But during the interview, he laid out three core strategies to take on LG and CATL. By 2030, he thinks SK On can be the world's number one EV battery maker. They will offer the cheapest, the highest performance, and the safest EV batteries, he says. The order backlog at the minute for SK is 1,600 gigawatt hours of the end of last year, backlog orders to work through. That's 27 times bigger than last year. But such their market share is so much smaller than CATL, he didn't share any more details on how exactly they will not only catch the Chinese CATL, but also overtake them. I'll pop a link to careerherald.com in the show notes. Now, Duke Energy are doing something interesting. What do you think of this? I'd love to get your feedback on this. Duke Energy in North Carolina are going to offer all-you-can-eat charging, or maybe I should say all-you-can-charge. $19.99 a month. It's a new proposal for residential customers in North Carolina to pay just $20 a month, and you get unlimited EV charging on the condition that you let Duke manage your vehicle's charging, which will help them avoid grid stress and therefore higher costs to Duke. Customers who consume outside of the limit, they say, which is 800 kilowatt hours per month, or if you opt out of those charging events, you might be asked to leave the pilot scheme. According to Duke Energy, that would get you 2,000 miles of driving in a typical month. So on the high end, but not wildly out of the ordinary for many Americans who drive long distances. Clean energy advocates say the program limits are an indication that subscription-based charging plans may not even work for all customers, writes Utility Dive. Highly recommend Utility Dive. Great newsletter to sign up to, which I thoroughly enjoy reading. And occasionally, good bit of EV stuff in there. They write, and I quote, "Unmanaged EV charging that occurs during or near the peak could mean that Duke needs to build or obtain additional capacity. This could result in increased costs for every customer. On the other hand, if EV owners agree to have their charging effectively managed by Duke and just delay their charging or avoid adding charging at the real peak times, it will reduce costs in short and long-term charging. The assets will be used more efficiently. If you can charge your car in the evening or even overnight, it means that you're using the grid when it's otherwise underutilized, and that means savings will be shared amongst all customers and not just EV drivers. All right, moving on. Let's talk Harley-Davidson. Two-wheeled electric action. They're planning on a second model for the Livewire brand. It's called the Del Mar for their electric motorcycles. Out later this year. It's a more affordable version below the Livewire 1 based on their new platform. Until now, the battery has been built into the frame, which is the only load-bearing component. But this classic frame is omitted from their new platform. Instead of being attached to the frame, the swing arm is attached to the side engine mount. The suspension strut is supported on the battery block, all by means of a deflection, and it makes it much more integrated into designing an electric bike from the ground up. Right, Electrive. The new arrangement saves weight, reduces costs, and requires new design of battery housings, as it not only protects the cells in the event of an accident, but also has to absorb other forces during the ride from the struts. The battery of the Arrow uses 2170 cells, like you'll find in a Model S or a Model 3 or a Model Y. And Harley-Davidson will connect these standard cells differently for voltage levels up to 400 volts. Popping a link to that in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Now, coming up very soon, we'll talk about new EVs coming from the Cupra brand and a facelift for the new Nissan Leaf. Stick around, those stories are on the way. Now, the US Postal Service are in the news today, and I must admit this one doesn't impress me, but I'm not in the US, so as always, I'm trying to interpret politics from a few thousand miles away, and I hope I do a good enough job for my American listeners. The US Postal Service has now authorized the replacement of their mail truck fleet. This has been a story rumbling on for a couple of weeks, and the order they've now signed is for all gasoline-powered vehicles. They've ordered them from the defense company Oshkosh, after the Biden administration unsuccessfully spent a couple of weeks pushing back hard at the US Postal Service to increase the amount of EVs that would have been purchased. The move, announced in a record of decision made yesterday, affirms the decision by the Postmaster General to move forward with this contested plan. 165,000 mail trucks over the next 10 years, and all of them will be gasoline powered. There is a contingency to buy up to 10% of them, which would have some alternative power, electrification in them, but otherwise they are all fossil-gobbling, gasoline, climate-hating vehicles. The agency said its plan is the most achievable given the Postal Service's financial condition. The US Postal Service saying the battery electric option has a higher total cost of ownership over those 10 years than combustion engines. However, environmentalists and analysts dispute the assertion, writes DetroitNews.com. And to add my own perspective on that, you know, I talk about this every day, every single day of the week. I'm reading hundreds of articles a day, and I bring you, 20 minutes of stuff that's important? I'm reading and absorbing, so much more, and background as well. I have never, ever once seen any data, and I'm not going to spin it for the sake of this being an EV podcast. I'll be honest, this is about being a trusted source of information for you. I have never once seen a total cost of ownership projection where EVs are more expensive than pure fossil vehicles. They are more expensive at the point of purchase, so you need some often clever, innovative financial structures in place, whether that is lease programs or a way of getting those vehicles into your fleet. But once they're there, the cost of ownership, the cost of running them on electricity with the rising gas prices as well, has never ever been proven to be any more expensive than gas powered. And even if they were, we should do it anyway. It's the right thing to do for the environment of the planet. We should do it. But it's, apart from that, the bottom line, the bottom right hand of that spreadsheet, when you work out your TCO of owning this vehicle for 5 or 8 or 10 years, or some of those vehicles are 30 years old now for the US Postal Service, EV is cheaper every day of the week. So for the agency to say, yeah, we ran the numbers, it's cheaper to buy fossil vans, it's not true. I guarantee you, it's not true. They can sue me for saying that if they want to. It's not true. EVs will be cheaper in the long term because of less maintenance and much lower running costs. Now, should every one of their vehicles be electric? Probably not. You know, if they're going into the deepest, darkest depths of some of the states, should some of them be diesel over this crossover period? Maybe. I don't know. I don't run their business. But that's crazy. That's Crazy. Environmental groups are now preparing legal challenges in federal courts, arguing that the Postal Service is illegally justifying this move to Oshkosh and make the $6 billion order with flawed analysis of purchase plans that underestimate greenhouse gas emissions and relying on faulty assumptions. Although the Biden administration has limited authority to tell the Postal Service what to do, it's an independent agency after all, federal courts have found that the USPS is bound by the National EPA Act, which requires analysis of any major policy decision. Federal courts have previously invalidated government leases sold to private companies after finding the analysis was not done correctly. My friends, this story will run and run and rumble on, because I don't believe that when they say, yeah, it's much cheaper to buy diesel stuff than electric. It's not. Over the course, if you have that vehicle 12 months, maybe 8 months to 12 months, it may work out cheaper to buy a fossil car. But these trucks are going to be at least run for 10 years, if not a lot more. It makes zero sense not to buy electric vehicles. Who knows what happens behind closed doors? But we'll find out when it goes to court and it's challenged and they have to prove their numbers. Now, we'll talk about Cupra, the very Spanish bit of Volkswagen, and slightly performancey bit of Volkswagen, confirming two new models in coming into its lineup in 2023. Both will be electrified. Not sure if that means full electric, though. Cupra is launching in Australia this year as well, and it'll be Volkswagen Group's first brand to introduce a fully electric vehicle, the Cupra Born. Used to be called the L-Born. Much better name. However, it's unclear what the new models will be in Australia. The new models coming for everyone. There'll be a coupe SUV. So, what? The ID5? Maybe the Skoda Enyaq Coupe? With a Cupra badge and one other as well. Look, they're all on the MEB platform. They're all going to be a version of the ID3, ID4, ID5. Skoda Enyaq IV Coupe with a Cupra twist. They're not going to make the whole new vehicle themselves, are they? They're just going to take what VW Group are doing from the catalogue and Cupra it up a little bit. And that's a good thing, because when they Cupra up the ID3, you get the Born. And that's much better. All right, let's talk about the Nissan Leaf now getting a facelift. Yeah, that's probably a little bit naughty of me to say. Nissan, so they've given the 2022 model year a facelift with new looks. Yeah, they have. They've put the new Nissan logo on. There's also new wheel options for 16 or 17 inch. And there's a black fascia finish. That's it. What? Come on, Nissan. Ariya is coming out this summer. We hope it's good. It's going to be very expensive, though, like $50,000 plus for the top-end Nissan Ariya. That's not where Nissan should be selling the majority of their vehicles. Nissan Leaf starts at £27,000 in the UK after the government money is taken off. From the 1st of March, you can place your order for the new facelifted Nissan Leaf. It's the same as the old one, but you get the new Nissan logo. Wow. I really feel that the Nissan Leaf is a great vehicle, but it's just ignored by Nissan. It's just an insult to say, to put a press release saying, the facelifted version is out. It's so not. Nissan Leaf is a great car. And yes, it does rapid gate. Yes, it can't keep its battery temperatures under control if you're really going to properly road trip the thing. But for so many people, that is not an issue. It's a really great car, decent family size. Just wish Nissan would love it a little bit more, but oh man, it's annoying. So, and yes, it's got the CHAdeMO plug, but it's fine. Most people charge at home. Nissan Leaf's a great little car. ID3 is next in the news, and they are, let's say, optimizing their lineup. Stopping taking orders for certain versions is more like it. You can't now order the ID3 in many of the less popular trims because of the semiconductor shortage. The only model available at the minute is the ID3 Pro Performance. Starts at £35,000, has a 58 kilowatt hour battery, 260 miles of range, has a 150 kilowatt motor. Orders of the ID3 Tour that has the big motor are currently suspended, and the small battery, the Pure Performance, the 45 kilowatt hour battery, also unavailable. Whereas the ID4, all of those versions, all six trim levels, are currently available from 58 to 82 kilowatt hour battery packs, and indeed for the ID5 as well. So it's just the ID3 that's really optimized, I guess you could say. You want one? Got to be the Pro Performance. I guess it's about 8 to 12 months before you get one as well. Know somebody that's ordered one of those in December, and he has a build date of July, if that actually happens. So that is only an 8-month wait, and that was last December. But things have got a little bit worse for VW in the meantime, but still a long time to wait to get your vehicle. Now, Electrify America is partnering with Kia. For owners of the new Kia EV6, to get 4,000 miles of free charging. Collaboration is 1,000 kilowatt hours of free charging to EV6 customers, which equates, depending on how you drive the vehicle, if you're soft with your right foot, about 4,000 miles of free charging. Some people have burned through that in about 2-3 months. However, Kia EV6 owners say that as soon as they have enrolled in the Kia Connect program, you get your free charging on EA, has 310 miles of EPA range in the US on the Kia EV6, so that is how we work out 1,000 kilowatt hours, around 4,000 miles of range if you drive it carefully. Now, the company Instavolt in the UK has been sold off by its previous owners, Zouk Capital. It's now been bought by EQT Infrastructure. Instavolt is one of my favourites, founded in 2016, and often in places where there's retail food and drinks outlets and stuff like that, often at a Mackie D's or a Costa's. And EQT Infrastructure are the new owners of Instavolt, and they want to roll out 10,000 rapid EV chargers by the end of the decade, or 2032, I think it was. And so hopefully more investment going in. Not that Zouk Capital ever underinvested from my outside perspective. I think they did a great job with that network. It's always reliable, wonderful hardware, and I hope their new owners take it forward. Now, in China, BYD sales could reach 1.5 million electric cars this year after selling 603,000 plug-in vehicles in 2021. BYD is aiming for a lot more in 2022, and that is 1.2 million. According to CNEV Post, the largest Chinese EV manufacturer could be on for a record year, setting targets of 3 million customers by the end of this year in total. Well, they got 1.5 million odd plug-in vehicles out there at the minute and about 100,000 commercial vehicles. So do the maths, and if they hit their target of having 3 million customers by the end of the year, that would be about 1.4 million new customers in 2022 alone, which is just an amazing number of people driving electrics and plug-in hybrids with a BYD badge on. Just a pretty amazing, amazing year if they can do 1.4 million plug-in cars in 2022. Wow, BYD are on a roll. Now, question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. Any BYDs you're going to nominate for the answer this week? What's the best-looking EV on the market right now? I'd love to know from you. Yes, we're being superficial, but I don't care. Tell me your thoughts and reason why. What's the best-looking EV on the market right now? Email me your thoughts. hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, thanks to our premium partners of the podcast, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, at emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. I'll see you tomorrow for Friday's show. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.